Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Electoral system and possible interference. And no, I'm not talking about rah-rah Rasputin, at least right now. No, I'm talking about the prospect of Canada's federal electoral system perhaps being subjected to some form of influence. So we've already talked about this a lot in the past. One of the examples that's come up frequently is geopolitical adversaries such as Russia will pour piles of resources into online bot farms and all sorts of different ways to try to influence discourse in nations that they're adverse to, or like in Ukraine, at war with. It's because it's the highest and best way that they can use their resources, because they have really highly developed information warfare suites. And as you've seen, their military is not really all it was cracked up to be as it continues to struggle in Ukraine. People's Republic of China, on the other hand, has very different motives, very different goals in terms of how it conducts its foreign influence, through both through its methods and the outcomes that it seeks to achieve. The media storm, the press release writes, surrounding the revelations of possible foreign interference during the 2019 and 2021 Canadian federal elections is far from over. As a result, the survey reads, we decided to explore Canadians' and Americans' views on the safety of elections in their respective countries, also surveying Canadians on their desire for an independent investigation into possible foreign interference in the last two elections. Here to talk more about this, we're joined by Steve Mossop, Executive Vice President with Léger Public Opinion. Morning, how we doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show, Adam.
What are we seeing in terms of how Canadians regard this matter?
When we originally designed the poll, I wasn't expecting the uproar and the results that we saw. And, you know, we had the advantage of doing polling that compares U.S. results to Canadians. So that's interesting in and of itself. But the extent to which Canadians are questioning our electoral system, I found a little bit shocking and alarming.
What are we hearing specifically?
So we have, we talk about the vast majority saying the elections are safe, 71%, but that leaves 30% who say that it's not safe. And taking a step further, trust in the election results, we have 20% of Canadians who say they generally don't trust the outcomes of elections. And I always thought over the last couple of years, you know, we look to our neighbors at the South and think, oh, we're immune from all the chaos that's going on down there. We're good. We have a safe system. And to some extent, the differences show that we do have more trust than the Americans do, but it's still shocking to see those kinds of numbers.
When we talk about foreign influence, do we see a difference, or do we get specific when we ask the public about what that means? Like, for example, influence can mean there's a lot of messaging or propaganda that influences the opinions of an electorate to be more likely to vote one way or the other way. Influence can also mean, you know, hacking machines and stuff like that. So what do we mean when we say influence?
Well, that's the unknown, and, you know, Trudeau pointed that out. He's not willing to talk about what methods and which ways that Canadians can be influenced or have been influenced. So we kept it fairly broad. We said, is the electoral system safe or not, and do you trust it? We didn't get into the nitty-gritty of what Canadians think might be happening behind the scenes.
Because we have paper ballots, as you know, the Americans rely in many cases, but not all, of course, because their election system itself is a patchwork quilt of various systems developed by various state organizations. We have paper ballots that are impossible to hack by a foreign power, but on the other hand, we have a wide open internet that might make it very easy for some folks to be influenced. So what do we see in a difference between Canadians and Americans in how this issue is regarded?
So overall, you look at the safety of the electoral system, that overall question. We have 29% of Canadians say it's not safe versus 37%. So a measurable gap, you know, statistically a big enough gap. And then overall trust in elections has about a similar gap. So we've got 70% that generally trust the election outcomes here, only 57% in the USA. So, you know, again, about that 10 to 15 point spread in opinions. But again, I thought we were safer than that. I thought the results would have been really off the chart in the U.S., and Canadians may have seen it as a lesser issue. It's clearly not the case.
There was no doubt in my mind that we'd see Russian influence or Russian internet bots and whatnot, especially involved with topics like Ukraine, that we would be able to see just because the internet is global. When we take a look at the prospect of influence and interference from, say, the People's Republic of China, though, very different dynamics, very different goals, very different methods potentially, do we have a polling breakdown between those two things? And if not, how could we get one?
We haven't, but we put this poll in place, 7 or 8 days ago, and the story keeps evolving. So that is the next phase that we'll do, is looking at what are we more worried about? Are we more worried about Russia? Are we more worried about China? And also the question that you address is, what exactly are we worried about? Like, what is it? Is it social media influence? Is it something more sinister than that? So we have our work cut out for us, and this topic is not going to be put to rest anytime soon.
Yeah. All right. Steve Mossop is with Léger Public Opinion. Latest results, 30% of Canadians not necessarily feeling safe about our electoral system being above influence. As to what influence means, that's a nebulous question. Things get complicated from there. I want to say thank you very much. Where can people go for more information on this and other important surveys?
Straight to our website at Léger.com, and they're all free downloads. It's full disclosure on all the questions and how we crossed Abbott and all that.
All right. Thanks so much for the time, as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam.
All right. Have a good day. Yeah, I don't know. You know, I look for influence because I analyze politics and group dynamics and just the way the discourse ebbs and flows through certain power nodes along networks. So when I hear influence, I think who likes who, who's saying nice things about who, who's attacking who, who's boosting what, who's not boosting what. I think that it's entirely likely. In fact, it's unavoidable that we have been influenced by foreign powers because we don't heavily censor our internet. Russia has one of the most heavily censored internets on Earth, although I'm sure that there are others who might have even a more clamped down system, I think due in part because they understand how effective a weapon propaganda can be, and they're really good at it in terms of seeding other countries' discourse. Canada has paper ballots, though. So it's not like we could have election machines that would potentially be hacked by some foreign power. And that's something that the Americans, that specter sort of rears its head every so often. So I think that in terms of our election apparatus itself, how many votes for what candidate, I think we can trust in that more so than a lot of the American discourse we hear. But it's an interesting question when we talk about influence. You know, the whole idea of taking big money out of politics was a recognition that simply having an opportunity for everyone who wished to vote to attend a polling station to cast a ballot and to have those ballots counted was not sufficient to call it democracy. There had to be rules in place to fairly apportion the ability of various participants in the discourse to influence the general public. You know, money used to get spent all over the place on advertising. And one of the arguments that is relied upon in terms of changing the political system is that influence matters. And if there's too much influence on one side, the election itself can be considered unfair. So the system needed to be changed. Well, how much influence from a foreign power would it require for us to think that the results or the outcomes of one of our elections was not fair? And if so, how do we guard against that? You know, the Americans have saturated us with their cultural views as long as there has been broadcasting in terms of radio and television. In fact, that was one of the whole reasons that Canada originally created the Canadian public broadcaster, the CBC, was it was going to be distinct from what the American channels were going to be broadcasting into Canada, at least, you know, in the beginning. And these are complicated questions. And again, it harkens back partially to the conversation that we've been having about Langford today, where, you know, they bristle. They go, how dare you say there's influence? There's not influence. Of course there's influence. You've got ISIT using his position at the CRD to write emails in support of community grassroots movements. And then those same people involved in those movements go on to be the executives operating a political party. Of course that's going to have an influence. It's like planting a seed and it grows into a mighty oak tree and you say, that tree has no influence. Of course it does. Somebody planted that seed once upon a time, and as it went and grew, it made a difference. Same thing with Matt Dell and Cara Donna. Of course that made a difference. How could it not make a difference? The question that we need to ask ourselves is what forms of influence are so powerful and so potent so as to potentially make the outcome unfair, which requires us to enact rules or draft and then enact rules to prevent those forms of influence from being employed in the first place. I'm not saying anybody broke any rules out in Langford. We can take the position that what happened out in Langford perhaps should have been subjected to rules that don't exist. But as far as I know, I don't have any evidence of any rule breaking or law breaking in Langford. What I do have evidence of is an enormous amount of organizing acumen that was very favorable in terms of those who would go on to win the Langford election. And again, What more potent symbolism is there for the people of Langford, for a group of ecologically conscious people who are trying to preserve an ecologically sensitive parcel of land from real estate development near Finlayson Arm, and seeing Ben Isett championing their cause when Langford's own representatives at the CRD table are not championing it to the same degree? You know, the symbolism of that lingers. The symbolism of that lasts, and no member, at least I don't think Spock was there at that point. Was Spock there at that point, or was it Seaton and Blackwell? Neither of them were reelected. And while that cannot be considered to be the sole reason, it must be considered to have at least contributed to the overall discourse. Again, planting the seed that grew into the tree. It took a while, but it was there. That's what I mean by that. Quick break. Calls after this.
Keeping you informed, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Kennedy, a tester, writes, poured on the influence against Diefenbaker, helping Pearson win in 62. Entirely possible. But again, there's always going to be influence in politics. We draw lines that we call jurisdictions, be they states, provinces, municipalities, electoral districts. They have congressional districts in the United States. But ultimately, there's always going to be that arbitrary line that gets drawn, and it's going to be subjective, where we say, okay, there's going to be influence here. That always happens. It's important for us to be able to measure and assess influence to understand the dynamics, which is what we try to do on this program. Asking where that line should be and what sort of influence should be considered legitimate and illegitimate, that's a subjective question, and that's one that you are free to ponder. Was there so much influence out in Langford from Victoria political figures as to make the result illegitimate? Some people will say yes. Others will say no. It's legal as far as I know. So the question of what the mandate actually is, I think, is an open and alive one. And it sounds like Scott Goodmanson isn't sure about whether or not the turf field actually will get canceled. Again, indecision, not entirely helpful, but, you know, I don't know. He isn't a nobody and he's not an empty vessel. He's a person who feels very strongly and worked for, as far as I can tell, a year and a half. And actually, I just said somebody sent me a post and Goodmanson's talking about some controversy saying, make sure you bring this up closer to election time. And it's like 44 weeks ago. Again, somebody should make a coffee table book out of the Langford Voters for Change Facebook page, because it is the story of the Langford election. And it's told in posts from early February 2021 all the way through to September and October of 2022. The problem, though, is that we don't know who the editor is. We don't know who's pruning out comments and for what reasons. And if it was a partisan influence that was in charge of that, it would have exerted substantial influence over what the group participants saw, potentially giving one party interest an unfair advantage over others. And it's impossible to prove that that happened because we don't even know who the people were deciding to prune comments. Somebody kicked me out. I don't know who it was. And so I don't even know who to talk to because nobody will admit to being an administrator. It's just bizarre, but it is what it is. And I think the story of the Langford election is an interesting one, a complicated one, and it's certainly not the official one that we have been told, at least not entirely. Larry's up. Hey, Larry, you're on the air. How you doing?
Good morning, Adam. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm not doing too badly.
What's up?
A question, and then my opinion on it.
Sure, something. Yep.
First is the question. RCMP want to build an $85 million new police station out here in Langford. Where is it going to be located? I thought that they were going to be doing something with the RCMP in this new building on Pete and Goldstream Training and Police Center, but I don't know where. It's interesting. Where would they want to build a new police station? I can think of two or three good spots.
But it's the same location, as far as I know. They'll just be expanding it. Apparently, the city owns the land adjacent to it. To the what direction is that? To the east? Apparently, the city owns one or more plots there, and apparently it would just expand in that direction, is my understanding.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. Just expand, and then they can add another floor, revamp it or whatever. And it's a good spot to come and go from city center.
Yeah, they were talking about, like, one of the questions that was asked is, you know, why can't we buy cheaper land, say, down in Royal Bay, build it there?
And, that's not going to be cheaper.
Well, here's the thing, though, is the land that the station sits on right now at the corner of Veterans Memorial and Goldstream, like, if you put a residential tower or something like that there, that would be the center of Langford. You could probably get a lot of money for it. The central location, though, works much better for policing and dispatch, so that's among the reasons they want to keep it.
Well, it looks to me like they're building a multi-story condo right in behind the police station as it is right now anyway.
I'm not sure. They might be. One of the biggest...
It's excavated and it's on the go now.
Okay, because one of the biggest towers that they're building is actually where the arbutus tree was, you know, the one tree that they said is the heart and lungs of Langford.
All over the place, Adam.
It's like 28 stories tall. And actually, the Langford Voters crew on the Facebook page, they were talking about that development over and over and over again. I think they call it the Gateway. Was it? I'm trying to remember. But here's the thing, and that was before they made the tree the issue. They were doing big buildings. And then later on, they develop the tree, or they start fixating on the tree and how sad it is to lose the tree and how special it is. And all these people are like crying in the comments. And I'm thinking, oh my God. But that's how politics works, though. It works. Like, they won because they played the game better. We can argue about whether we agree or disagree with the tactics that were used, but the way Stu Young was beaten was not with a groundswell of popular public opinion. It was with extremely sophisticated tactics and a huge amount of work from a relatively small number of people, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. Okay, and then the other thing here is, let's not forget that Lisa Helps took a delegate to China a couple of years ago.
I was thinking about that.
And she welcomed them to come here, build business here. The gates were wide open to China. Oh, she went on and on about it.
Well, and that's fine, right? You know, we want money. We want people. We don't want a foreign government to try to tell our government what to do. We want to maintain our sovereignty. So how do we tell the difference?
Yeah, and then you see, don't ever forget that she welcomed the campers from park to park all over Hell's Half Acre, and that jerk from the federal park saying they're all welcome to come into any one of the parks and camp. Up to two nights, you know, or as long as they're
what
open at 7:30 in the morning.
What year was that?
She's trying to create her crap and her mess all over the place, you know. And then you got David Eby there, you know.
NDP needs a new leader. He's not working out. No, he's not working out. The NDP needs a new leader. It's not too late, but him, just like the decisions he's made so far. Victoria Council basically went off the chain as soon as he put Helps in the premier's office. Their behavior across the street changed overnight. I expected that it would. I was afraid that it would, but it totally did. And the signal that was sent was a clear one. It's that you can have one of the most notoriously dysfunctional governments in the entire CRD. You can get 81% dissatisfaction at the MNP governance review. You can preside over all of that. You can have the former premier saying that if he saw the mayor of Victoria coming, he might well run the other way over the Sir John McDonald statue thing, and yet you can still end up being rewarded and put in the premier's office. David Eby, it is the single most unhelpful signal I think he could ever send, and he sort of did it as an afterthought, like it didn't even matter.
Yeah, he's not solving a damn thing in this province to make anything better, and trying to get rid of all the fun that's left over in the pot there, tossing it around from every angle and stuff like that, instead of putting it on the national debt or building a wing on a hospital or something. Just throw the money out in midair, and then we'll see how we can make out from there on. Make a lot of people happy because they got some money and stuff, and hope like hell it does something for us in the next election. What a bunch of riffraff.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about foreign governments, election interference, municipal election interference, and I've been thinking about Victoria, Larry, and my mind's going places that I don't like it going, because ultimately we don't know, but... But I'm sitting here thinking, like, what if the reason all of us feel like we're going crazy, what if the reason all of us feel like our system is broken and it's not representing what the public will really wants is because it's not representing what the public will really wants? And I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know how to dispel this sort of this feeling that I have now, and I wish I knew.
Yeah. How the hell do we get ourselves out of this mess?
Yeah, because if the system's skewed, how do we unskew it? Because you need to get people in power to unskew it, but nobody's going to vote to change the system that empowered them. At least they ordinarily wouldn't be expected to, because they might be effectively voting themselves out of office. It's catch-22.
Yeah. Or short a nice fat paycheck.
Yeah, that's the other big one.
Yeah, what a pile of mess we're in.
Yep, like usual.
I'd bring the hammer down on the whole works if it was me.
Larry, you've given us a lot to think about today. I want to say thank you.
Talk to you later.
All right. Have a good day. Take care. Yeah, I don't know. People are like, Adam, what do you think about this? Honestly, I don't know. How would it even work? Presumably, like, we have paper ballots, so I don't think anybody can mess with those. So when we're talking about influence, we're probably talking about information or advocacy that would, I guess, potentially change prevailing conditions so that more candidates or some candidates might be more likely than others to win. So, yeah, when we talk about the integrity of an election, there's a number of different levels where that integrity can be potentially either infringed upon or even compromised. And until we develop a specific set of terms to adequately convey exactly what we mean when we say interference, I think that we're going to have a lot of misunderstandings and probably a lot of overheated rhetoric going back and forth. That's just my two cents for now. But again, I'm watching this one cautiously because my brain wants to reject it because it's too much like a spy movie. But I'm thinking, what if? And I don't know the answer. Quick break, back after the news.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Hi, Adam. They're digging a hole right beside Boston Pizza. Is that the property that the new police station is expanding to? I think it would be slightly south from there. Texture. It's my understanding. My understanding is it would be largely the same location, but I think that, and I'm trying to remember, it was Superintendent Preston gave the presentation to council February 27th. I can hear him in my mind. I believe it was, there's a third floor. They mentioned a third floor in terms of the parts of the detachment that work up there. They had a plan for developing the site in stages where they would be able to relocate operations to parts of the overall property that were habitable and functional while the newer portions were being constructed. That's my understanding of what the plan would be. And overall, I believe the site was expected to be expanding into a parcel that the city owns, or parcels. I can't remember if it's one or more, directly to the east of it. And I know that there had been concerns. I think it was Guyrie that brought it up. Councillor Guyrie, my apologies if it wasn't, about the idea of surface parking being used for the new RCMP detachment, but it's just cheaper. You can dig a hole, tunnel, and put cars underground if you want. Costs a lot of money. Aesthetically, you might find it very pleasing, but it would likely be surface parking, and there were some concerns about that much of Langford's downtown core being devoted from now until many, many decades in the future, because they're not going to tear down the police station, need it somewhere, to surface parking when it could perhaps have a higher and better use. And that's the whole debate about where to put cars in cities, right? And, you know, the developers, it's expensive to have parking there. But on the other hand, if people have a choice and they want parking because that's their primary residence and you don't give them a place to store their car, you're creating hassle for them because they're going to have to maintain a contract or an arrangement or a similar agreement with someone somewhere to at least store the vehicle. Because a lot of us want to reduce our car use. In fact, I think that it's fair to say that it is an environmentally conscious goal for us to reduce, note the word, our use of the automobile. That's very different than selling the car and giving it up forever. I know lots of folks who try to take the bus when they can, who try to walk when they can, who try to cycle when they can. They still have a car in their garage because sometimes you need a car. When you're asking somebody to move into a residence that has zero storage for their vehicle, you are asking somebody to give up that car and give up that flexibility for even infrequent use. Now, car share services and other similar services do exist, and I'm sure some could attempt to rely upon them. But there are very few things that beats the reassurance of knowing that you have your vehicle outside. You know when it was last checked at the mechanic. You know about any problems that it might have. You know what it's capable of, what it's not capable of. And you know that it's still going to be there, unless it's stolen, of course, when you go out for that flight at the airport at 4 a.m. on Saturday or something like that. And giving that up entirely is the only way that you don't need that parking space for that car storage at your residence. And that's a big jump. We're not there yet. Not as a society, not in any appreciable number, I would suspect. That's just my opinion, though. Let's go to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, you're on the air. How you doing?
Ah, good morning. I'm doing good. Having a coffee out of my CFAX mug.
Right on.
Yeah, I don't know if you still have these ones. Got a yellow dot on it, CFAX 1070, but it's an older mug.
Yeah, it's a three-color one. I can't remember what year that was.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking of getting the name Wayne embossed onto it, too. Send you a picture of that.
Yeah?
Anyways, I enjoy listening to Larry. That guy's one of the, you know, common sense guy that calls in. So he's up there with me.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop shop out in Langford, they, you know, it makes more sense. And there was a plan just to build on top of it, add a few more floors, which was the original plan.
Yeah.
With the previous council. So they don't really need to go anywhere. And as Larry says, it's right in the center of town. And who cares if they build condos and 29-story buildings next to it? It doesn't really matter. It's still in a very convenient place to get to, mm-hmm. even though that detachment covers the Highlands and, you know, out to Souk Road, out to the Machos, or out to the Souk boundary or whatever it is, and the other places they go to, Colwood, Machosen. The Victoria City, or the Victoria Police Department, was built the same way. I remember when they shut down the old jail down on Fisgar Street and built this new one up on Caledonia.
Yep.
If you look at it, it was built in a manner where they can easily add new office space to it. You know, if you look at the second floor of it, they've got these arch or whatever. It's a structure where they can just enclose it and make it be more part of the police station.
Is that why it's like that? Like, I've noticed that design. I didn't know why, though.
That's exactly why. And if you go back into the 80s and read the when they were opening it and building it, that's exactly why they did it that way. So if they ever needed to expand it, it would save them a heck of a lot of money to do it that way, just to fill in those walls or whatever, those pillars they have up there. It's all good to go. The reason I was calling today is I heard something really absurd. The city council, I don't know if it's that Caradonna guy or whatever his name is, wants to bring in bicycles, you know, those shared bicycles or whatever.
Yeah.
You read about that?
I think it was Dell. Matt Dell tweeted out a picture of himself between what looked like a bike share e-bike. That might have been what it was.
Yeah, it's the most ridiculous thing on earth, because the green ones that they had in town, each and every one of them was stolen and dismantled.
Remember?
By the derelict.
There was one on top of a building. Yeah, there was. They showed up on top of buildings. People kept throwing them in the harbor, and you'd see, like, you'd squint down through the water when the sun was high at an inclination, and you'd see the green bike down on the bottom of the.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I was on the 8th Street Parkade once, and I looked down across the street, and the top floor of one of the buildings, there's one on the deck. But, I mean, to this day, if I want to be nostalgic and remember those bicycles, all I got to do is cruise around town, because it's only a matter of time before I see a chop 10 speed, like $3,000 bike with a green wheel on it, right? Because they parted them out and stuff. But I mean, that's the biggest joke on earth. He wants to do that again. And maybe he needs to be reminded of what happened to the last company that did that. And that company actually heard them on CFAX one day talking about it. Well, yeah, it's just got a few rough bumps and stuff here, and we'll get it all worked
well,
out.
Well, what are they going to say, though? But, like, you're a corporate spokesperson. You're going to come on and be like, yeah, this is really embarrassing. Don't tell anybody.
Well, and then I remember when they were on there, because I think I called you and I said, like, why don't they just tell the truth and say all the drug addicts and everybody, all the thieves and the, you know, all the...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, get that crew mad at them as well. Yeah, no, that'll go really well.
Every one of them. They were all stolen and dismantled. And then he was saying, too, he thought, yeah, we just got to figure out how to do the helmets. Well, the helmets were the first thing stolen, because you see these people in their tents or down in Beacon Hill Park, and even at the, I think it was over at the Christchurch Cathedral site behind the courthouse, they had green bikes and green helmets from it and stuff. Man, that stuff won't last long. I mean, in Calgary and places, they've got scooters. Kelowna's got them, too, those little two-wheeled scooters and thing, and I'm wondering how those things survive without being stolen, right?
Maybe it's timing thing, though. Like, what if, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, what if there is a time in a city's evolution, if you will, where a bike-sharing business will actually work, and we weren't there before, but we might be now? What do you think?
Well, there's a possibility, Adam, that it could work. I mean, maybe the people that are the destroyed the last system that they had in place with those shared bikes, maybe they're a little nicer than they were back then, because... You know, maybe they don't need bikes as much as they did before. But, I mean, I don't see it working at all. I don't even see it working for a month. It's going to be a matter of days. And these bicycles are different, because I was reading the article about it saying that they're electric, and there's a sort of a gray, foggy area where you're not really allowed to have motorized bicycles or whatever. They're going to work that out. But, I mean, God, next thing you know, they put the electric ones down here, and the bums will be stealing those and putting the electric motors on their shopping carts so they can get from one camp to another quicker, right? They'll be riding shopping carts around because they're powered now. You know, it's an absurd idea that the dying downtown Victoria, with multiple plywood covered buildings from smashed windows that I just saw over the weekend. I mean, the dying downtown where nobody wants to be there, the workers don't feel safe going to their offices. They'd rather just keep working from home. And here, let's put some nice bikes down here. I mean, the only part of downtown, like I said last week, is a park that's marketed to tourists and the cruise companies, and it extends from Dallas Road up Government to Fizgard and then down to Wharf, and that's it. It's like, put the wall up there, because the tourists are not going to want to see what actually really goes on in Victoria and what Victoria really looks like. I mean, I would love to be a tour bus driver and say, well, we're going to take a detour today, like we're heading up to Craigdare Castle, and, you know, and work out a way where I could, like, take them down Pandora and go, you know, just see the jaws dropping, and if they say, oh, what's all this? I just say, oh, it's just a campground. Like, people camp here, right? I mean, I don't know. The city's a joke, and I think it's going to keep dying. Like I said, when the auto industry pulled out of Detroit, look what happened to Detroit. One needs only go on to do a quick Google search of what Detroit looks like, and that's where Victoria is heading. I mean, the boarded up windows is the start. You know, it's a disgusting downtown, other than Government Street. So,
all right, Wayne. Thanks, Rick. Yeah, have a good day. The input. Have a good day. Take care. 250-386-1161. Star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. Texter at 107010 writes, Texter 13 writes, caller, if they're from almost any city, they've seen the street stuff. So should the goal for us to be having less crime and disorder that we see manifest in other jurisdictions? The same? More? The problem is that we just used to say, no, you can't do that, and we're going to invent a rule that will allow us to stop people from doing things that we don't like. What don't we like? We know it when we see it. And that's no loitering. The problem is that ever since the Charter was entrenched and interpreted, and I don't want to make it sound like personal rights and freedoms are a problem, but the complication, there, that's better, is that you can't force somebody to move along. They have movement rights. They can just stand on that street corner because they have a right to be there, as long as they're not hurting anybody. We used to use loitering laws, not because we had a problem with somebody sitting idly on a park bench, but loitering was a super easy thing to prove that would allow police officers to identify problem case and say, hey, you, move along. And as long as they move along, that's the end of the conversation. Everybody goes on their way, no harm done. And if they don't move, then they get the citation for loitering. But loitering itself was never the problem. It was just an ease of proof issue and a tool to get rid of people who were causing trouble. We don't have that tool anymore, and I really don't think we've come up with a replacement of the same level of efficacy, although the prospect of misuse and folks being abused by it surely is also something that I should take into account. It's just tough because it feels like things are so lopsided right now. Yes, I don't want a situation where authority figures can abuse their power to punish the poor. Nobody wants that. I don't think we have that right now, and I think that our fear of even going one inch toward that has made us go so far back in the other direction, overcompensating, that we're all turned around, and we have systems that are malfunctioning the opposite way, and that's not good either. Quick break, back after this.
This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Texter at 1070.10 writes, who is getting shut down tonight at Langford's council meeting? Oh, yeah, you imagine that? Somebody's going to be like, Mayor Goodmanson, why on May 10th, 2022 in Langford voters, did someone with your name say, I am curious if Stu had his RCMP handlers there again? He had the RCMP telling people who could and couldn't ask him questions at the Station Avenue briefing last year, saying, I didn't realize he feared for his life with all his bravado and kicking butt attitude. I'm surprised he would hide behind the police. Yeah, there's a guy I feel really comfortable about officiating the police budget and the valuable RCMP relationship with the municipality of Langford going forward. But, you know, things can always get worse.
I don't come downtown because there's not enough cultural opportunities in public parks. If there was a great public space downtown, that's what would bring me and many other families downtown. So I think by canceling this out, we're adding money to stuff that works for some folks, which is good, but we're canceling.
I'm sorry, I can't listen to that anymore. What did I want to talk about? Oh, yes! Speaking of waste of time across the street of the city of Victoria, while the world burns around us and we are on the brink of war with... I guess we're not on the brink of war. I don't want to be overly dramatic. But, you know, there's a whole lot going on in the world right now, other than should we be able to get a ceramic plate for our Big Mac? How's that going to work for Skip the Dishes? It's not, among many other concerns. Ian Thostson, president, BC Food and Restaurant Services Association, on Victoria's foray into some kind of a bylaw to mandate some sort of option for reusable containers for the food industry.
Of the BC Restaurant and Food Services Association. So you're obviously following this and to get a reaction to it. What are you hearing so far about this?
Morning. Yeah, well, you know what? Kudos to the city of Victoria. They've been, you know, we've been working on this for 3 years back and forth. And so essentially what it means is that you, in our case, restaurants will not be handing out single serve like utensils and, you know, plastic utensils.
Here's your mason jar. Keep it clean.
And stuff, unless requested.
It's on a piece of twine.
And if you don't request it, you don't get it.
Imagine that. People carrying around utensils like mittens pinned to your coat. God, what a bleak future.
So that's for takeout. And then the second.
We're not actually doing that. Relax.
Second part of the bylaw, proposed bylaw, is that if you eat in a restaurant, they must be on reusable containers. And therein lies, I think, some, I'm going to call them opportunities at this point, but some problems if you've got, you know, some area, some places that can't. They don't have the facility to wash dishes or plateware for, so they could be qualified as reusable. Or I'm thinking about ice cream places that, you know, you get them in the little trays and stuff. And so we're going to have to find ways, not around it, but to deal with it, because in some cases the business the way it's structured really isn't set up for the reusable plates. By and large, most restaurants do. They have a dishwasher and stuff, but it's going to be some exceptions on the fringes that we'll have to deal with.
I know one of the things, and we talked about this, about what happened in Vancouver, because Victoria staff originally proposed introducing that 25 cent.
That was never going to pass. The fee, it failed in Vancouver. They were never going to pass it here. Even they wouldn't do something that bad.
Fee for single-use takeout containers. And then removed the requirement because council, I guess they were looking at, you know, what the reaction was in Vancouver and thought, you know, we don't want to go down the same path. So that point's good, because we talked about the impact that had for Vancouver restaurants and establishments too, right?
Yeah, it didn't do anything. It just raised the cost by 25 cents. Most people just tap their card and they go, and they didn't pay any attention to it. And then, you know, in the city, so I don't know, you know, the city sort of said, well, you know, we want to be sort of conscious about inflation and stuff. But the reality is, it wasn't changing behavior. And what we want to do together, you know, it's all of our environment, is how do we collectively work together to get these outcomes? I mean, there's 220,000 single-serve items in Victoria a day that's generated. And, you know, and equally that in Vancouver. So how do you deal with that? But the 25-cent deposit fee on a cup of coffee didn't do anything. People just sort of went paid it and just continued to do it. So how do you divert that coffee cup into something that's, you know, either reusable or can be dealt with? It gets kind of technical, because some of the stuff, they get contaminated, so it can't go into the landfill, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's a big opportunity, but I think, you know, the city, we have to continue to find, and maybe some of these businesses will have to be exempt, because it's not fair to ask, you know, Al's restaurant that's been, you know, doing business for 20 years suddenly to install dishwashers and plateware, and you may not have the money and you may not have the space.
Right.
So how are we going to deal with that? That's our challenge, to work with the city. And so far they've been really good at sort of being very sensitive to business needs. Same with, you know, with now, if you go to say McDonald's, the wrappers are exempt, and so they could wrap your fries and your burger, but they start putting, and you can go and then eat in.
Mm-hmm.
If they put it in a box, though, technically you're going eating out. And so we've got to deal with that. These are the quirks that are going to come forward here.
We talked to a couple of establishments here in Victoria, like last week, about this and how they felt about it. And one of the reactions was, man, we're dealing with so many other things right now, and we feel like we're doing our part, and, you know, we're using recyclable materials, etc. This is one more thing. So how do we react to that, and how do we get establishments to essentially, and some buy in, but some are kind of like, wow, geez, do I have to do another thing? You know what I'm saying when I say that?
Yeah, and I was talking to the city actually this morning, because I wanted some clarification. I said, you know, just let me remind you that we're so challenged labor-wise. that even the smallest changes in the business model and or the financial commitment to do something different is pretty really hard right now.
Yes.
We've got time. So the bylaw is in to be authored and written, so it's not really written yet.
Yeah, it hasn't even been drafted yet. And like Caradonna was talking about bold action, and they put that in the motion for staff, and Chris Coleman said, you know, bold, what does that even mean? If we're asking staff to draft something for us, we should try to be as specific as possible what we want or don't want, and bold is obviously going to be a relative term.
It will be. And then it goes to council for a review, and then it goes from there, it has to go to the provincial government, which will take months and months for them to review it. So we're probably, you know, 8 months to a year away from anything being implemented. And so that gives us some time to sort this stuff out, because we really have to be sensitive to the small business owner that's up against it, as you say, and there are many, many of them in Victoria, that these kinds of changes, although they don't sound like a lot, they take up time, and they take up time when in a time when they're really compressed for time and money.
I did hear that, like just like businesses, and we talked about, you know, what restaurants are going through and inflation and everything else, and some of them are teetering on, you know, whether they're going to continue or not. So,
yep.
And I'm guessing the key to that is dialogue between the city and the establishments, right?
It is so key, because, you know, business is all about confidence. And that's the whole, you know, basis of the banking situation. Now, once people get confidence, they see a plan, they can work with it, and they've got some time to implement it. It's really critical. If we are in uncertain areas about, you know, right now, potentially, like what's, you know, what are we going to do with minimum wage and labor shortage and stuff, we don't know. That's when the damage starts to occur. But in the particular case of Victoria, they've been open. They've been honest, and
what?
They've been willing to sort of, you know, they haven't taken this from a sort of a completely.
I think they really didn't want to see the fee, and they're happy there's no fee, and they're thinking maybe there will be something to do with cups, but it's not done yet, so they don't want to anger those across the street. Maybe
philosophical, we must do this by then approach, but rather we keep telling them, if we're in this together, we're going to have great results. If you pit business against the city, then it's not going to have a good outcome.
Well, I mean, you know, one would hope that business matters enough for there not to be a good outcome if the city becomes actively hostile to them, although I have my doubts these days with a new and improved electoral system. We've got one more hour coming up right after the news. Texter 107010 writes, I carry around a reusable straw, not you, sea turtle killer. Texter, sea turtle killer? I mean, the way that some people around this place, like just the South Island, talk about me, you'd think the lights dim when I walk into the room. Sea turtle killer is the nicest thing I've been called today. More next hour.